Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
It's certainly is, and as promised, we have a couple of special folks joining us right now. You know Bridget Blitch by now. Bridget, of course, is a partner at the law firm of Taylor & Associates down in Florida, and she has been with us for several months now, doing a series called Protecting Your Livelihood, and we've really zeroed in, well, on the law, because after all, she is a lawyer. And she always is more interested in talking to you than me, so the phones are open, as always. But this morning, Bridget has a friend joining us on the program, and I've talked about John earlier, so we won't go through the whole biographical detail. But John Seidel, he heads up Integrated Risk Solutions, and he is a longtime transportation consultant, has a background with law enforcement, with FMCSA, with the FAA, with various safety groups. He's also worked closely with the National Drug and Alcohol Technical Advisory Group and the National ELD team. And that is why John is joining us on the program this morning. So Bridget and John, join us and you in just a moment for this month's edition of Protecting Your Livelihood. InTouch is offering a great solution to your ELD issues. InTouch simplifies compliance, offering both BYOD, that's bring your own smart device, and complete systems. BYOD solution comes with a free Bluetooth dongle, no contract required. That's right, a free device with no contract, just $19.95 a month. And if a complete system is more your speed, InTouch offers 3-year financing at $44.95 per month. And your ELD search and get back in touch with the road. Visit InTouchELD.com. Get rid of your worries about ELDs. InTouchELD.com.
Hi, this is Sandra Sanford, Vice President of TA Truck Service Road Squad. You know, while there's never a good time for a breakdown, they always seem to happen at the worst possible times and under the most adverse conditions. I just want to assure you that when you find yourself stuck in need of roadside assistance, you can count on TA Truck Service Road Squad. From the friendly and knowledgeable agents that answer your call and diagnose your breakdown, to the highly skilled technicians that perform a quality repair, we understand that your profitability is based on getting your truck rolling and keeping it rolling. Just dial 800-824-SHOP, and from the moment your call reaches our dispatch center, you'll have our team's full attention. That's our promise. Because when, no if, you break down, we show up. TA Truck Service Road Squad, 800-824-SHOP.
TA and Petro, full service means at your service.
You know it, football season is here, and then there's you probably not watching the game. Well, no more missing out. I'm talking you, kicking back to live football in your cab. If you're a company driver, you have the chance to get Epic View. They work with your fleet to get DirecTV with NFL Sunday Ticket installed in your cab at no cost to you. Go to tvformytruck.com. Follow the instructions to request Epic View for your company. tvformytruck.com, where downtime is game time. tvformytruck.com. It's time for Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget Blitch from Taylor & Associates. Bridget, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Great to have you with us. And I thought maybe you would do the honors and do the formal introduction for John here this morning.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And it really is a pleasure and honor to have John with us here this morning. I had the pleasure of meeting him in my travels to Wisconsin and was introduced to him by a dear friend of mine, Carrie Legg, with Integrated Risk Solutions, and had some opportunities to sit down and really get to know John. And he is just such an asset to the industry, and so thankful that he's here with us this morning.
Well, John, that is a great introduction. I certainly couldn't do better than that, so welcome.
Yep, but thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, just give some information out to your listeners, so I look forward to it.
One of the things, so before we kind of dig into the ELD, you know, I've been kind of kidding around, and I've been calling the program WELD Radio because we've been talking ELDs quite a bit, but it is the huge issue in the trucking industry. We haven't had anything this big, I don't think, since the actual CDL came into play back in the early 1990s. That changed things considerably. In many respects, and then in others, not at all. The ELD will change things dramatically in most respects, in a sense. And, of course, a lot of folks say the ELD is not the problem. The hours of service are the problem. Maybe the ELD mandate will uncover those problems, and maybe something can be done to change those. But that's maybe a discussion for another time. But, John, before we kind of dig into the ELD, I kind of sidetracked myself there. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do at Integrated Risk Solutions.
All right, so Integrated Risk Solutions is a risk firm. It's an insurance brokerage firm, but we go a little bit further than that. What we really want to do is protect people. You know, we want to protect people, and if we can protect people through risk management by reducing your overall cost of risk. So if we can lower CSA scores, lower your crash exposure, less workers' compensation, then in turn that's going to turn your insurance premiums at a lower level. So we provide a lot of services above just providing insurance. Like, I'm their DOT expert on staff, and I also sell insurance. So what we try to do, like I said, is just overall reduce your cost of risk by having a safer operating environment.
Got it. Well, when it comes to the ELD, it's the electronic logging device. There have been several iterations of electronic logging capture systems, if you will. One of them is the automatic onboard recording device, the A-board. There have been other bits of alphabet soup thrown out there for this unit, that unit. And I've been kind of told that a lot of folks think that they already have an ELD. And when you ask the question, well, how old is it? Well, it's a couple of years old. And the answer generally is, well, no, that's not really going to be an ELD. Is there still some, I won't say misinformation, but maybe misclassification of what people have at this moment in terms of, is it a real ELD?
I mean, I would think this is a great way to start off the show. To get rid of some of the acronyms that you've heard out there in the industry is probably a good way for us to start. So AOBRDs are automatic onboard recording devices. In 1988, they wrote the rule for AOBRDs. Then fast forward to 2015, which, if you do the math, is 27 years later, they came out with the ELD rule, which is going to be in place in the next 3 weeks. So in the middle of all that time, from 1988 to 2015, there's been some other acronyms. One big one is EOBR. EOBRs came out in 2010, and there was actually a final rule to mandate EOBRs for the worst carriers in the United States of America, those that are conditional and unsatisfactory. But as we all know, and I'm sure we've heard, OIDA got that EOBR rule thrown out in 2010, 2011 due to driver harassment. Well, the technical standards for an EOBR were set in 2010, 2011. If you grab the final rule from 2010, 2011 for EOBR and compare it against the ELD final rule, from a hardware perspective, those devices are very similar, meaning a lot of the vendors that were around in the EOBR days actually developed their device for that standard. Well, fast forward to ELDs, now the hardware for those devices are pretty much going to be ELDs. Question there is the software in the device. Everybody knows how their phone is a hardware phone, but then they get software upgrades from whoever their phone provider is. Same thing with this. We've got devices out there that are pre-EOBR, which were earlier than 2010, that really don't have the hardware to be an ELD. But then we have the devices that have been around since like 2011, 12, 13. From a hardware perspective, they'll be ELDs. The question is, from a software perspective, have they updated the system? The last one I want to talk about is electronic logging software. Those are the old apps that were on laptops and phones that were not synchronized to the engine. And if they're not synchronized to the engine, they are not an AOBRD, nor are they going to be an ELD. So those will not be legal unless you use them as quote-unquote paper logs after the mandate.
Wow, that is a great crystallization, John, of all of the acronyms through the years. Now, the ELD itself has to capture data. It's a data capturing device. I think we can agree that most of these things are, even the tablets. But the tablets really don't capture data because they're not hooked up to anything to capture from, so to speak. It's strictly the driver input on that. The tablets don't know what the engine or truck is doing. But the ELD will know several things, and there are seven elements that the ELD has to capture. Can we kind of just touch on each of those seven elements? And if you have anything you want to kind of add in there about them and maybe the whys and wherefores, that would be great too.
Well, I mean, here, I think I'm going to take an approach on explaining to everybody really how an ELD works, right?
Okay.
So there are two main types of vendors in the United States. That device that is designed to be an ELD, meaning the hardware and the screen and everything, the only purpose it serves is to be an ELD. Then you talk about tablets and phones. Those are the quote-unquote bring-your-own-device systems. Well, the system that is designed to be an ELD is like a very durable computer that is directly connected to the ECM. And it's one device all-encompassing. The tablet and the bring-your-own-device, like a phone, it actually does connect to the engine if it's going to be an ELD. How it connects to the engine is through, like, a brain, like a box, or some people refer to them as pucks. That connects to the engine, and via Bluetooth, all the data from the engine and GPS data is sent to the handheld device, phone and or tablet. So whether you have a bring-your-own-device or you have a dedicated computer, to be an ELD, they have to be connected to the engine. Now, let's just take that one step further. Instead of going into seven elements it needs to cover, let's just talk about what an ELD is. It's connected to the engine, and with the ELD rule, when you step on the gas and you go more than 5 miles an hour, it'll move you to the driving line, whether it's a bring-your-own-device or a dedicated computer. So an ELD, if the driver's logged in, what we know is absolutely accurate is when you're driving over 5 miles an hour, we'll show you on the driving line. Then every time you change a duty status, it'll capture the location. Anything other than line three driving and where you are, the location at change of duty status, everything else is really still a paper log because you have to manually select off duty, manually select sleeper berth, and manually select on duty not driving. You have to manually choose when you're in personal conveyance, manually choose when you're in yard miles, and you have to manually enter in data in the header in order to be compliant. So again, just to reiterate how these work, if a driver is logged in properly and he steps on the gas more than 5 miles an hour under the ELD mandate, the device captures his driving and locations. Other than that, management and people managing the log still have to treat it quote-unquote, in a paper log scenario.
John, let me ask you a question, because one of the things that that's been coming across my desk is, what's better? Should I use my smartphone, or maybe it's less costly if I have my drivers use their smartphone versus a tablet that's connected with the vehicle? And more specifically, what happens if that driver takes their cell phone and brings it, let's say, into a receiver? What happens then to the connectivity? And does that disrupt the information that's being collected?
All right, so let's start with cell phone and tablets. The good thing about using a cell phone and tablet is most of the drivers have cell phones and or tablets, so the training necessary isn't as robust. But we all have tablets and cell phones too, so we understand that charging them is sometimes questionable because the battery life might be questionable. The chargers have to be replaced. The screens break. They're not as durable. Plus, you need a data plan with the bring your own device, which ends up adding to the monthly fee in a lot of cases, not all cases. Now let's go to the other device. A dedicated computer is a bulkier device, generally. It's a little bit more money up front, but then you have less monthly fee going forward because you don't have to pay for a data plan. So does a company want to have a hardwired device that costs a little bit more up front with lower monthly fees in the long run? And this isn't every device, but that's just a general rule. Or do they want to go with a bring-your-own device that has its issues with, you know, broken screens, missing devices, charging, battery life, et cetera, where you have, in some cases, additional monthly fees due to data plan? Now, if you're a larger company, the dedicated devices generally have better capabilities for integrated dispatching systems. The bring-your-own device, like a phone or a tablet, is good for the small guy, you know, because he already owns a phone. So why own a phone that can be your display mechanism and your interaction mechanism and then go buy a dedicated computer when you're a one-truck guy? So a lot of the one-truck guys gravitate more towards the tablet and the phone, or, you know, two or three. The larger companies are generally not running those systems. Now, you talk about going into a facility. There are some hardware devices that let you take your device into a facility, but at the same token, you bring a phone into a warehouse, you may lose connectivity, but you'll gain that connectivity back by the time you get back in your truck and then go back onto the road. What we have to remember is the only time you're ever in violation of the hours of service is when you're driving. If you're not driving, as long as you make corrections before you start to operate again, you won't be in violation.
We're going to take a break right here. We will be right back. John Seidel is with us from Integrated Risk Solutions. And, of course, Bridget Blitch is with us. This is Protecting Your Livelihood. Bridget, a partner at Taylor & Associates. When we come back, we'll head straight to the phones. We have a lot of calls coming in. 615-292-6366. Well, I've talked lately about how trucking used to be the old mom-and-pop truck stops with the best food and great service.
That spirit still lives at Sapp Brothers. Since 1971, the Sapp Brothers giant coffee pots have said welcome to generations of truckers looking for the real thing. And you'll find it at 17 Sapp Brothers from Utah to Pennsylvania.
At Sapp Brothers, the mission is simple and meaningful: to treat every customer as a guest by providing a clean environment, quality products, and a commitment to excellent service.
At Sapp Brothers, they do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
What I want to know is America moves by truck.
You've been putting it off, buying and installing that ELD, but it's not too late to order your low-risk, low-cost solution from Gorilla Safety. Time is running out, though, and you know that. Extra staff is in place right now. They are working double time to help you through the ELD mandate, and the Gorilla Safety experts are standing by to help you get compliant as soon as possible. Now, the process is very simple. Call or go online. The phone number, 833-353-9564. That's 833-FLEX-LOG. 833-353-9564. Or go online to gorillasafety.com. Gorillasafety.com. The solution is just a few minutes away. Gorillasafety.com, your king of compliance.
This is Tim Ashoff, president of Creek Carrier Corporation. At Creek Carrier and Schaefer Trucking, we believe that drivers deserve more. That's why, effective January 1, Creek Carrier and Schaefer are increasing pay for our over-the-road fleets and many of our regional and dedicated drivers. Our OTR drivers will start out earning 47 to 53 cents per practical mile, and with profit sharing, the top 50% of our drivers will now average over $73,000 per year. We believe you deserve more out of your career. Visit CreekCarrierJobs.com to apply now.
This is Claire Marie. The lines are open, and the number to call is 615-292-6366.
Well, let's get into phone calls here, guys. Bridget Blitch, John Seidel are with us on this edition of protecting your livelihood. And 8-Ball is with us in Tennessee. You know, 8-Ball called in at the beginning of the program, and I asked Jamie to say, you know what, you have an ELD question? Hold on a bit. Call in with Bridget and John are on, so we're going to put him on here now. Good morning, 8-Ball. How are things up in Tennessee?
Good morning. This is the old 8-Ball here. I got a quick question to ask. The weather's looking pretty good. The question is, transporting RV trailers across the country, we have to use logbook like regular truckers, but do we have to have the electronic? I was told we didn't, as long as we're pulling an RV trailer. Is this true?
So I can interject there. There are three exceptions that were built into the ELD rule. We won't get into great detail because this is more of an overview show, less specific, unless we need to go that way. We'll let Dave decide. But three things were built into the ELD rule. If you are a short-haul driver, meaning you leave and return to the same spot driving CDL or non-CDL trucks, there's a 100-air-mile radius exemption and a 150-air-mile radius exemption. If the majority of the time you meet that, which means no more than 8 days over a 30-day period, you go outside of that, you're exempt from the ELD. Another one is drive-away, tow-away, delivering new trucks. Another one would be any engine year 1999 or older. The ELD mandate actually said model year in the beginning, but FMCSA changed that to engine year. Since then, people have petitioned for extensions or they've petitioned for exemptions. There are three exemptions that have been pretty readily published over the last few months that have come out, with more to come, I would guess. One is TRALA, which is the Truck Rental and Leasing Association, got an exemption for short-term rentals. If you have 8 days or less short-term rentals, so you need a vehicle for 5 days, you can run paper logs as long as you possess the previous 7 days out of whatever ELD you happen to be using. But once you get a rental that's 9 days or more, you got to use an ELD. One thing about that rental exemption is you have to have a copy of the Federal Register in your truck or you don't get it. So that's a caveat to make sure that your leasing company is providing. Another one would be livestock. Livestock got an extension through an appropriations bill in Congress. And then coming out pretty soon is a produce extension for 90 days. Those are the only six that I'm aware of right now. And again, there's more to come. I have not heard any Federal Register or any rumblings about the hauling of RVs in interstate commerce, meaning in the furtherance of a commercial business. RVs are obviously exempt if you are the consumer of the RV and you're not operating in the furtherance of a commercial business. You can run RVs around the country. But if you're actually transporting them for hire, you will not be exempt unless somebody from some association requests an exemption through a Federal Register and it's granted. But I haven't heard any rumblings about that.
Wow, 8-Ball, I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, but that's the answer so far. And I say thank you so much, 8-Ball. And John, I say so far because on November 20th, the FMCSA put out a notice that they were going to put out a clarification on certain things. The couple of the exemptions you just mentioned, plus personal conveyance, are going to put out some more guidance on that. Plus, there would be a comment period attached to that. I check every morning. It's not in the Federal Register yet, so I don't know. You know, that's kind of hinky, if you ask me.
I think a good lead-in, Dave, and I don't mean to interrupt you with this personal conveyance,
yeah.
I'm going to let everybody understand a little history on personal conveyance. So right now, 395.8, question number 26, it's a guidance question in the regulation. It says that if you are relieved of all responsibility for performing work, and you travel short distance, and you're unladen, so those three things, you can actually drive your truck under the ELD mandate in excess of 5 miles an hour under personal conveyance. So because ELDs are coming and drivers need more flexibility, this personal conveyance thing is going to be used more and more and more in the industry. Now, that guidance question has been around for well over a decade. I can't even tell you how long, but it's not new. The reason that we didn't really have it rear its head is because with paper logs, we could always fudge and just run to that truck stop 20 minutes up the road and not put it in our paper logbook. Again, that wasn't legal, but we all know in the industry that that occurred. Well, now with the ELDs connected to the engine and GPS, it's much more difficult to do those things. So this is an exemption that allows us to drive off duty. Now, when you just mentioned, Dave, that they're going to provide additional guidance, I would say it's about time. It has been years and years and years where even enforcement personnel, inspectors in the United States, wanted clear-cut guidance on what is a short distance, what is unladen, when are you relieved of responsibility? And it appears with this memorandum you're talking about, this press release, that in a week or two, we should have more clear-cut guidance on what this personal conveyance is.
We're going to break right here. We'll be right back. John Seidel, Bridget Blitch with us.
Now, back to the Dave Nemo Show on SiriusXM's Road Dog Trucking Radio.
And right back to Protecting Your Livelihood. Each month, we get together with our friend Bridget Blitch. She's an attorney, a partner at Taylor & Associates in Florida. And this morning, we have a special guest with us. John Seidel is joining us to talk, well, you know what, ELDs. And John is with Integrated Risk Solutions. So we're going to go right back to the phones because we have so many calls and so many interesting things to talk about. And I don't know if we're going to be able to top what JL is about to lay out for us up in Oregon. JL, good morning. And you're on with John and Bridget now. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning, Dave, and everyone on the show there. Appreciate you guys being there for me. I've got a question about I haven't heard an answer for this one. I'm a flatbed carrier. We've got a couple of trucks. We've purchased our ELDs, and they're wireless that goes to the ECM to our phones. There is one particular facility, a military facility that we go to, that we have to take all of the electronics out of our truck at the check-in point and bring it into the facility. They hold it for us. Then we take our load, and then we take it on the base and deliver it, and then we turn around and come back out. Now, my question is, how is that going to work with the ECM in the port and my phone in the facility, and I'm going to have to drive on the base maybe a couple of miles or something like that to and from? Do we have any answers for that, or do we know?
Yep. So what I'm going to do, and this is a good answer, I mean, everybody on the call might be like, I don't go on a military base, but ultimately my answer, I think, is going to help everybody. There's this thing called yard moves, yard moves. Yard moves is where you operate. If you drive on a non-highway per the regulation, you can actually drive while on the duty status, on duty, not driving. So now, a non-highway. A highway is defined as a road, street, or a way that is not open to the public on public or private property. So any way that's on public or private property, not open to the public, and when they say not open to the public, they mean there's got to be some kind of restrictive gates and fences or prohibitive signs. Let's take the military base. When you get to the gate at the military base and you enter the military base, is that open to the public? No. Is it a road, street, or way? Yes, it's on public or private property, sure. But it has restrictive gates, which means when you enter the facility, you can push yard moves on your device and operate on the military installation. And when you leave, then you can push yard moves is ending. So if they take your device, as long as you select yard moves before you get onto the facility and then operate on the facility, then reinstall it when you leave, and have it operate properly at 5 miles an hour going to driving, you can be on duty not driving during that period in which you're on the military base by using yard moves. Now, one little piece to that, though, it does say if the ELD malfunctions, you have to fill out a paper log. I wouldn't call this a malfunction because it's being forced, but to cover yourself, I would just fill out a paper log for that small period of time in which my ELD is not capturing my time, and write on duty not driving on a paper log for those few minutes, and just keep it in my possession just in case an inspector questions whether or not it is a quote-unquote malfunction, which I don't believe it would fall under per the definition.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. That definitely answers my question. The paper log seems like it's going to save me if I come to that situation again. So, that's great. That answers my question. I appreciate the help. And Dave, love your show. I'm a first-time caller. And you guys have a good day and get some other questions in there.
JL, thank you very much. Don't be a stranger. We love having you with us here, on or off the phone. Well, let's keep rolling and head up to Indiana now. And Scott is with us, and he's going to kind of dig a little bit deeper into the personal conveyance issue. Scott, go right ahead. On with John and Bridget.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'll try not to make this more confusion than it already is to me. Hauling a reefer and being a trainer for the company I work for, I have to explain to new drivers that when you get to a ship or a receiver, you go off duty. You're supposed to go on duty, not driving, but everybody knows you go off duty. What happens when you are a half hour, 45 minutes away from where you're going? You're out of hours, or their shipper, the receiver does not have parking and does not allow you to park on their facilities when you're unloading, or excuse me, after you're empty. You have to leave. You're out of hours, but the closest truck stop is an hour and a half away.
Gotcha. So
you
let's
get
just
caught,
and
you,
part
you
of
get caught
could
driving
be...
on the. Per- oh, go ahead.
Yeah. All right. So. This is a scenario that I brought up in other presentations, and it is a tricky one. I'm going to go back to what Dave Nemo said about getting additional personal conveyance guidance via Federal Register in the next week. So what I'm about to say now has been the premise previous to this day. This could change in the next week, but I don't think it's going to change so much where we don't at least understand the premise. So let's say I'm going to take your reefer unit. Let's say you get to a shipper at your 12th hour, and it's 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and that shipper and receiver is a good shipper and receiver, and they either load or unload you in a timely manner, getting you out by the 13th hour, and let's say there's a truck stop 45 minutes away. So you get to the truck stop at 13 hours and 45 minutes. That would be a preferred shipper, a preferred receiver, and a scenario that really doesn't happen quite often, right? But ultimately, yeah, that would be the perfect scenario. Now let's take reality. Reality is you get there on time in your delivery. You're at your 12th hour. It's 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and they hold you up for 5 hours. Well, now you're held up for 5 hours, and let's say you just got loaded. You can't use personal conveyance because you're not unladen, right? You're working, you're laden. Even though 45 minutes could be considered a short distance per se, you can't use personal conveyance. So what you want to do is ask the shipper if you can drop your trailer. If they say no, ask if you can stay. If they say no because they don't have parking or whatever, you're going to have to drive over hours unless FMCSA comes out with some guidance in the next week to contradict what I'm saying. So now here's the piece I would recommend. Send a message or a text or document who told you to leave. In the event of a crash on your trip to the truck stop over hours, it is possible that you could get in a crash and be subject to liability. It would be really nice to have a documented trail of all the facilities that don't accommodate drivers. The other piece I want to let you know, which is very interesting, and I don't mean to take too much time, it's really important for all the listeners, there's a thing called the coercion rule. The coercion rule came out in January 2016. If a shipper or receiver forces a driver to operate over hours and the driver objects and the shipper receiver don't accommodate that objection and the driver loses some kind of work opportunity or a threat, he can file a complaint with FMCSA against the shipper and receiver. Now, this is unprecedented because never has a shipper and receiver been subject to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations from this angle, right? So now we talk about loss of work opportunity. Everyone on the call knows hours of service. If you're there at the 12th hour and you get pushed to the 17th hour and they're forcing you to leave, right? Now, if you leave over hours, you violated, you get to a truck stop, you can do an 8-split sleeper. You can do 8 in the sleeper berth, add it to 2 of the 5 you just took. The only problem is you just lost 3 hours of work opportunity. If you don't know how to split or you don't want to, you're going to have to take 10 at the truck stop, even though you just drove over hours, and you're going to lose that 5 hours. That's the documented loss of work opportunity under the coercion rule. So I'm not telling everybody to go and file coercion rule complaints. All I'm doing is saying is there is a level of protection that these shippers and receivers need to understand, because now it's just not drivers subject to this rule or motor carriers. This ELD is going to affect shippers and receivers, and they also have a responsibility for hours of service.
I like the ELD. I like the e-logs for the simple fact, like I was telling the producer, I don't have to run as hard. I can only drive 11 hours a day, regardless of what dispatchers and brokers say. And now shippers and receivers are responsible for us, for detaining us longer, making us say you either get here or don't show up at all. It's passing the responsibility on to everybody, not just the drivers.
You know, I love that you say that. I love that you say that, because I wish all the drivers in the country would start to gain that mentality, in that the reason that these shippers have done what they've done to us, the drivers, over the course of the last you know, 60 years is because we've almost enabled them to do it. Because when they hold us up for 5 hours, there are many drivers that will shrink that time in their paper log down to an hour. And they'll take it on the chin for the shipper. Well, we can't do that anymore, so it's forcing the shippers to become compliant. And I'll tell you, last time I checked, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. with a 30-minute break is a pretty long day. And I think drivers deserve to have some time off. And I'm glad that the ELD is potentially going to do that.
I talk to a lot of veteran drivers. When I first started driving, I never had a trainer. I never went to school. I learned by following a couple older guys that showed me how to drive in the wintertime and then showed me how to run my logbook. When I started training, I tell students, listen to these old guys. There's a reason they're old. They know how to do it. They know what they're doing. Well, then when I started showing guys how to run a logbook, I have to show them the legal, 100% legal way to do it. I ain't got to worry about it now. I'm not worried about running across the scale. My weight's legal. I got electronic logs. What are you going to write me up for? I got a 2018 Freightliner. It had 27 miles on it last week when I got it. My truck's going to pass. DOT's just a waste of my time when it comes across their scale.
Scott, good points. Thank you very much. And a good question, too. John Bridget, we're going to kind of... He kind of almost led us into the courtroom, but Dogman is going to take us inside. So here comes the judge. Dogman, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning.
I got a question now. I got a question, okay. In the past or present, till the new mandate comes out and everything and all this gets put in place, the lawyers have always used your logbook to try to prove you that you falsified or you was somewhere you shouldn't have been, you know, try to put a time stamp to say that you shouldn't be where you're supposed to be. Okay. And when this all comes in effect, supposedly all that is going to be thrown out. So I'm kind of wondering, what is a lawyer going to be trying to use an ELD or, you know, what will be the next forum in the courtroom for them to try to prove you negligent in some kind of way? And then also, too, I've been hearing all this talk about FMCSA can use all this data and stuff from the new ELDs to try to change the hours of service and change what's wrong and everything like that. Well, according to them, it's not tracking and all like that. That's just recording your hours of driving and all like that. So if they're not tracking you and they're not keeping tabs on what you're doing and all, where is this imaginary data that they're going to be used to change all this stuff with coming from? You follow what I'm saying?
Well, I get you. Bridget, do you want to handle any piece of this or do you want me to go?
Yeah. I'll take the first one and you can take the second one, John. Dogman, you're right. The plaintiff's lawyers have been trying to use the logbooks as a gotcha for drivers, and particularly where it looks when you evaluate the liability of the case that the driver was free from negligence because perhaps the plaintiff swerved right in front of the commercial motor vehicle and the driver was unable to stop. So in a situation where on its face it appears that there's no liability on behalf of the driver, the plaintiff's lawyers dig into the logbooks and say, well, but that driver was operating out of service, and had that driver not even been on the road because they shouldn't have been, then but for that, this accident would not have occurred. So that's a common scenario where they try to use the logbooks as a catch to get the driver and the motor carrier company to have a claim of negligence against them. So what I would foresee in the litigation context is now we've got the same information that's being captured only now electronically, and so the plaintiff's lawyers are still going to be in their discovery asking for the copies of the electronic logbooks and to see if there's any hours of service violation. But hopefully we won't have those violations in place, and therefore the arguments that, well, but for the driver violating that hours of service rule, the driver wouldn't have been there and this accident wouldn't have happened. So it's still going to be a part of the discovery process, and the plaintiff's lawyers are still going to look at it. But I would like to think that certainly it's going to be harder for them to prove up the negligence against the driver and against the motor carrier. And then particularly, too, like John just mentioned in the previous example, with the driver taking proactive steps, right, to in a situation if they're forced to be on the roadway and they're having to violate an hours of service rule, documenting that back so that there is that record to show that they were put in that position. So I think that hopefully we'll see the trend of that discovery lead to less liability in cases, but it'll still be a component of discovery.
Yep, and then I'll add one thing to that. So you were talking about with paper logs, if your log's false or you're over hours, et cetera. Well, log falsification has been the biggest thing with paper logs. Can you falsify an ELD? Let's just talk plainly for, you know, maybe 15 seconds. Can you falsify an ELD and put yourself in a position of legal liability? The answer is yes. I already told you that if you're not driving, you can lie about every duty status. So if you're supposed to take a 30-minute break, but you're really working by supervising the loading and unloading of the trailer, then you just falsified your log, didn't get your 30-minute break, and that's an out-of-service condition. So your duty status selection, not having your form and manner. Another big one is some drivers get to their maximum hours with an ELD, and they log off and drive. That's called an unidentified driver profile, right? So the only difference is it's easy to catch it because the engine and the GPS is still tracking the vehicle. Even though it's not in your logbook, it's still tracking the vehicle, so then discovery, they'll find it. So I don't want people to think that ELDs can't be cheated and you can't play games with them, because you can. It's just easier to get caught. Now let's throw in the other piece where you had talked about data and FMCSA. This is a fact, I'm going to tell you, an absolute fact. Any trucking company that buys an ELD, the only person, the only entities that have access to that data are the vendor you chose, the motor carrier, and the driver. Vendors are not sharing data with the federal government, period. Trucking companies are not sharing data with the federal government unless they undergo a compliance review and or they undergo a roadside inspection crash that requires that data to be accessed. If you don't get pulled over and you don't get a compliance review, the government's not getting your data. And then you, the driver, you have access to your data. Do brokers and receivers and shippers have access to your data? Only if the motor carrier gives it to them. So to think that FMCSA has access to the data and can monitor all the drivers, that's kind of a misnomer, because there's no avenue for the government to collect this data from these vendors.
Bridget, John, thank you very much. Wow. Great question, Dog Man. Thank you so much, and great answers. Okay, now let us keep moving here. Our next caller is in Texas. Rusty Hinge is with us, and Rusty Hinge, you're on the show. Go right ahead with John and Bridget.
Well, good morning to the three of you.
Good morning.
I ran a tablet for 2 years, and then I changed it to an ELD, and I liked it. It was easy. It looked like a paper logbook page. All my information for every day was right on it. But the company I'm leased to didn't like it, so I've had to switch to theirs. Now, on theirs, for me, at the end of the day, to verify everything that I have done during the day, I have 16 screens to check. I cannot, when I say I've verified everything, and yes, it's all correct, I can't find out on there where I verified it. If there's a place, something that I don't want to verify and correct, I can't find the place to say I don't verify this, and I can't correct it. When I got my printed logs last night for the last month, I looked through it, and I'm looking at it and saying, no, this isn't right, this isn't right, this isn't right. And what they're doing is, this is what happened. I stopped and I fueled 8 minutes. I idled ahead because that was less than 5 miles an hour, and I parked for 30 minutes. It said I had a 31-minute break. My mistake was I didn't take a picture of it because as soon as I moved the truck, it said I'd had a 29-minute break and I had a 2-minute violation now. I had to retake that 30-minute break. So I phoned the company. I said, what's going on here? Oh, that's common. We'll fix it for you. What did they give for an excuse? Driver didn't use the e-log properly. I've never been trained. I can't even get a manual for this thing. And it's supposed to be federally licensed, and I'm supposed to have a manual, I understand. Where do I sit with all of this if I get DOT'd and don't know how to explain everything in there?
John, I know you're going to jump on this, but I just wanted to add, and you probably have heard this quite a bit too, but we kind of did a survey on the show some time ago asking drivers, when you got your ELD, what kind of tutorial or training did you get? And the generalized answer was, well, I walked in and they told me I had an ELD in the truck. That was pretty much it. There hasn't really been a good comprehensive training plan. I mean, I'm sure some companies are doing it, but by and large, we're hearing the drivers just have had no real training on how to get the most out of them, if you will. So, John, I want to get your take on this, of course.
Yep. Well, I do a lot of training for trucking companies and for drivers, and I have some companies that were proactive, ones that put it in a year, year and a half, 2 years ago. I got some of them throwing them in the next 10 days and said, hey, run paper, run ELDs at the same time, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? So I get the training struggle, and that all has to do with who your employer is, who are you working for, and what they're doing. So now to get into his question about anomalies that occur with the device, no device in the United States is perfect. I have not found one vendor that has like the device that I say, this thing never has any issues, just like our phones. You know, sometimes we're just using our phone and it turns off or it call somebody, or you know, you push the screen and it doesn't work, so you have to boot it off and boot it back on. So technology is what it is. But now to go one step further, we talked about AOBRDs from 1988. We talked about ELDs now. Some of the vendors have not upgraded the software to ELDs. So when I had said that at 5 miles an hour it moves you into the driving status, that's only if you have an ELD. There are vendors out there where the software is still an AOBRD and it is grandfathered, and you may be running this device for the next 2 years. There is no distance or speed threshold mandated under the AOBRD rule. And that's because in 1988, they didn't know what to write in the rule. And it took 27 years to write a new rule. So if you're running an AOBRD solution, you're going to have a lot more inconsistencies with some of these scenarios than if you're running an ELD. So let's fast forward to an ELD for the caller. If you have an ELD legitimately, there are a minimum required items that you need to have. Some vendors will add a bunch of other bells and whistles that you need to confirm. So as long as you understand what the minimum things you need to certify at the end of the day to be compliant with an ELD, the rest of it is company policy. You get what I'm saying? So some vendors keep it simple, some don't keep it simple, and I understand, I probably even know the first device you were talking about, the one with the paper log that was real simple. Some of the devices are simple to use, some aren't, and it's a shame that you had a device that you were comfortable with as an owner-operator leased onto a trucking company and they wouldn't consider letting you continue with that device, considering you're not a company driver.
And John and Dave, let me add on to that too, just a word to the wise here, that motor carriers that have drivers that are leasing onto their operating authority are governed by the Truth in Leasing regulations. And one of the requirements in that rule is that you cannot compel a driver to purchase a product or service. So when a motor carrier is leasing out its operating authority, it needs to be careful that it's not violating that rule, and that if they're going to require, let's say they have a certain device that they want to use for their logging, that they give the driver the option to have a compatible unit, that they're not forcing that particular unit upon the leased operator. And that comes out of some concerns from a prior case, Trans Am leasing out of the Tenth Circuit.
Wow. Wow. Okay. What a great way to kind of wrap things up here this morning. I wish we had more time. We do not. Bridget Blitch, thank you so much for being with us first. And then thank you so much for bringing John Seidel to the program this morning. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners did too. John Seidel from Integrated Risk Solutions. And of course, Bridget Blitch, partner at Taylor & Associates in Florida. And that's going to wrap up this month's edition of Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget Blitch. News and weather coming up next. Bottom of the next hour, it's Canada Calling with OBAC.